For SearchSAP.com, I'm Rob Westervelt. You're listening to the Compliance Edition for July 2006. Compliance is a hot-button issue of late. CIOs and IT managers are grappling with how to address compliance issues and control spending. The Sarbanes-Oxley Act was passed in 2002. Sarbanes-Oxley was aimed at preventing the corporate accounting scandals that bankrupt giant public companies such as Enron and WorldCom. But the issue goes well beyond Sarbanes-Oxley. The banking industry, pharmaceutical companies, and even chemical manufacturers have their own set of regulations they need to address. Joining me on the line is Joshua Greenbaum. He is a market research analyst and principal consultant at Enterprise Applications Consulting. Welcome, Joshua.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is Abby Mulders. Abby is Chief Information Officer at Dow Corning Corporation. Abby also helps coordinate the CIO-CTO Executive Exchange Board as a volunteer with the America's SAP User Group. Thanks for joining us, Abby.
Thank you.
And also, Rod Masney is joining us. He is president of the America's SAP User Group and also Global Information and Technology Architect for OI. Welcome, Rodney.
Thank you for having me today.
Matt Danielson, the site editor, is also joining us. He's the site editor of SearchSAP.com. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you.
We can go in a number of directions here talking about compliance issues these days, and I guess we should start off with a general overview of where many companies are in terms of compliance spending, and then we'll focus solely on SAP and specifically SAP's new governance, risk, and compliance management business unit. The new unit was among some of the bigger announcements at this year's SAP Sapphire User Conference. First off, let's sort of bring us up to date on where we are on compliance spending. I know there's a number of surveys out there that say companies will be spending more and more. Joshua, where are companies spending? Are they spending on technology? Are they spending on consultants? Is it a mixture of both?
It's a mixture of both, and it's a very broad picture, which is definitely linked to the fact that compliance is a very, very broad term in the market. And I think that, you know, one of the important things about the SAP announcement and the both the acquisition of Versa and some of the other things they've said since is that SAP is rightly looking at the market as much broader than just Sarbanes-Oxley and Basel II. Compliance is really an issue that it deals not just with legal and regulatory compliance, but compliance with business rules, with business practices, both internal and external. And if you look at it in that broader sense, most companies have really just begun to scratch the surface in terms of getting their hands around this larger compliance issue. So we see a lot of early spending. Most of it, not most of it, but a large piece of it is mandated by legal and regulatory issues. But going down the road, we're going to see a tremendous amount of spending on this bigger picture of compliance and risk and governance that really permeates pretty much everything companies do and is a pretty open area for a lot of innovation by both vendors and their customers.
Now, Abby, are you seeing the same thing at Dow Corning in terms of compliance spending? Is it solely on Sarbanes-Oxley?
It is much broader than Sarbanes, and from a governance standpoint, compliance is probably right up there in the top of the echelon as far as initiatives that we're working on and really working towards getting our hands around. What does it mean from a company standpoint? How are we going to instill the right internal controls, not just from Sarbanes and finance standpoint, but across the board? And working in a chemical industry, we also see a lot of pressure around the regulatory area, more transparency about our processes and how we would find controls that would actually be triggered when we are working through a business process.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rod, from an ASUG point of view, What are you seeing in terms of people asking for support? Are there a lot of companies out there looking for best practices in this area as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the most passionate influence activities that ASUG has working with SAP is around the topics of compliance and security. As the conversation started today when you asked Joshua the question about compliance and investment, more and more companies are spending more and more dollars to make sure they're adhering to the compliance requirements as well as securing their information assets. So from an influence perspective, we have very passionate influence councils around security as well as the CIO-CTO exchange is focused on the whole topic around security and risk management.
Now, Abby, a Gartner analyst I spoke to recently said that he saw the burden of compliance being shifted from the business side to the IT side. Is that what you're seeing right now? Is the shift really focusing on IT covering compliance? And
I think overall it's getting to be more of a partnership, at least at Dow Corning. We know that from a business standpoint, the company is responsible and accountable for our practices. From an IT side, we're providing the software and the stewardship over the processes to enable that set of activity to happen. So we're really trying to come to the table together and put best practices in place.
Now, compliance is obviously mandatory, and much has been made of the fact that people have to spend a lot of money jumping through these hoops. But I'm wondering, Josh, you touched on this in the April executive column, and we talked about it a little bit here. But could you talk a little bit more about the real business benefits of compliance?
Well, you know, the nice thing about taking a broader view of compliance is it's not just about the regulatory regime. It's not just about keeping your CEO or CFO out of jail. There's actually real, genuine money left on the table that can be scooped up with good compliance and good business practices around compliance. So a lot of the direct business benefit can really be about having tighter controls over your processes and preventing leakage of revenue, leakage of product, leakage in your supply chain that you might not otherwise be aware of or that may sort of fly in under the radar. Another big business benefit is really keeping everybody in your ecosystem in line. There's a number of interesting companies I've worked with that are doing helping track how orders and invoicing and some of the basic functions of the back office are in compliance with terms and conditions of contracts, terms and conditions of the marketplace. And the it's fascinating when you look at what happens with rogue orders, with gray market orders, and the damage they can do to companies and the supply chain. Getting a hold of that kind of issue, which is a compliance issue as well, can really, you know, tighten things up in a way that is frankly beneficial to the top and bottom line. So there's a lot of good business side of compliance as well as just the, you know, keep the CEO out of jail side.
Now, but can compliance get in the way of doing business? Abby, do you want to address that?
I think that you got to look at it from the non-value-adding standpoint of if there are issues uncovered, there's a lot of immediate reactionary actions taken to get in the game and figure out what's gone wrong and put the process back to right, and then, you know, cover your tracks with your customers, your media, the government, whoever. So I think there's a lot of non-value-added activity that you can hopefully prevent by having your processes tight, and you don't have to go through that kind of exercise too often.
Mm-hmm. If I can just jump in on that, again, I also like to refer to a true ecosystem value in compliance, whereas you may run the tightest ship in the world, but if the companies you rely on as partners, as suppliers, as customers are doing things that are frankly illegal or illicit or otherwise, that impacts you as well. And I think that having a healthy regulatory environment lets everyone play at a level playing field, but also, frankly, protects everyone doing business in a supply chain or value chain from the kind of rogue operations which, unfortunately, we've seen all too much of in the last few years, and companies that are that were dependent on some of these entities who shall remain nameless, who really broke the law, suffered tremendously themselves. So there is a price to be paid. Unfortunately, for being compliant, there's perhaps a bigger price to be paid for living in a world which doesn't have sufficient compliance.
Mm-hmm.
And I would agree. And the governance aspect of that is really, how do you inform all of the people in your company that are interfacing with your external suppliers and customers so that they're operating at an integrity level that keeps them, you know, in the right place at the right time, and, you know, doesn't have these leaks happening across the value chain. So you really have to have a real good program to train and get familiar with your entire employee base that's out there doing those kinds of interactions.
How do projects, compliance projects, initially begin? Do they begin in a specific area? Does it?
Yes. Actually, I think that probably the most simple scenario is that, you know, somebody uncovers or wants to tighten up their business process, or they want to make a change. New regulations come down the pike that you kind of are scanning the environment for, and so that really then triggers the project to kick off, understand what your software can do, what your business processes are, and what the people behind them are doing. And, you know, that's pretty much the three legs of the stool that kind of you have to work through to get it all completed.
Abby, if I could maybe add on to your comment, I think there's two scenarios. I think there's, from my perspective, there's all the systems and processes we as IT people have deployed that are in production now, running today, and there's the looking forward. The real challenge is to not inspect the controls and quality in, but to build it in into the process so that we don't have to examine it at the same level of detail that we're examining the legacy processes. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair, and that's so true. And, you know, I think the expectation is as the software matures and really is the best practice or, you know, the baseline for how you run your process, that those controls are going to be built in.
Yeah. I think from an ASUG influence perspective, that's the type of counsel, from my company's perspective, we're hoping gets built into the governance, risk, and compliance initiative that SAP has going through influence. I guess my hope is that SAP becomes even more diligent about putting those controls in into the business processes and into the technology they're delivering.
Now, I wanted to focus more into onto SAP and ask Joshua a little bit about what the purpose behind forming this business unit. And I know for quite a while, SAP was mainly working with partners in the area of compliance, and they acquired Versa Systems, and then that sort of developed into this business unit.
I think that, you know, what the partnership with Versa, which of course predated the acquisition, showed to SAP was an absolutely tremendous demand for compliance, risk, and governance-related product. And, you know, there's the pipeline was absolutely bulging, and one that SAP, you know, was obviously very cognizant of. I think when SAP really went out, and you know, a number of analysts and observers had seen this already, when they went out to the customers and talked about this broader issue of let's just not think about SAR Box and Basel II, let's think about it in a bigger term, it really became obvious that compliance, risk, and governance is something that permeates, you know, the issues at hand in every company, in every industry, on an ongoing basis.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the initial idea was, wow, this is, you know, this is a huge opportunity for SAP. It's a huge opportunity for customers to get the controls going better. And Versa represented a platform that SAP, upon which SAP could base a whole sort of, if you will, next generation of compliance, risk, and governance services. So when they, you know, they bought Versa, I mean, the initial partnership with Versa was product related. The acquisition is more platform related. They really want to make the Versa platform the should we say sub platform or sub infrastructure within NetWeaver, and use that to drive, quite frankly, very large both partner driven and SAP driven initiative towards a very broad range of compliance, risk, and governance products. So SAP, you know, and I've talked to a number of people inside SAP about this, the notion that this is one of the biggest, you know, the biggest new things to hit enterprise software is it permeates a lot of their thinking. And I think they're right. I think we as analysts, we as customers, we as vendors all agree that there's a lot to be done with this broad picture of compliance, risk, and governance. And SAP, you know, with the Versa acquisition, wants to really make a run for it.
For the most part, though, just from looking at it, at least at this early stage, I know SAP is wrapping in the global trade services into this new unit, that software, the composite application. And also, obviously, the Versa platform is the foundation of this whole thing. But are we going to see really some new software come out of this?
Absolutely. And I've seen already some of the, or talked to already some of the startups, early stage companies, and established companies who want to be part of it, and there's some very exciting things that can come out of this. So there's, you know, for instance, a company called RF Tracks that has developed a GPS sensor system that can be installed on any moving stock, but they're looking at the locomotive the rail freight industry initially. Well, you know, rail freight has a lot of issues relating to governance, risk, and compliance. With regard to the status of individual freight cars as well as larger shipments, being able to track that very, very closely, being able to tie the tracking of those rolling assets to an ERP system that understands what's on that, what was on that tanker that derailed, what was in that boxcar when it hit four G forces at a bad piece of track, you know, 25 miles away from the factory. Knowing those kind of things, being able to match the ERP system, would allow shippers and manufacturers to have a much, much better sense of what they're trying to accomplish in their supply chain. They would have a much better sense of what their regulatory risk is if they have an accident or derailment. These are the kinds of issues that we almost don't think of today as compliance, risk, and governance, but there's a lot of very exciting things you can do in the software world. When you tie into an engine like Versa and link up the data you can derive into the larger ERP environment, all of a sudden you really have some very interesting new opportunities.
Now, Abby, in terms of the SAP customer, for the most part, they were relying on third-party vendors and SAP partners to fill the gaps. And if so, where were some of these gaps?
Well, I think that, we started the conversation with compliance as a very broad subject, and the gaps kind of go across the whole gamut of governance risk. So, you know, we've got to be specific about how we segregate these things and, you know, work to influence SAP about where the areas are that we have to prioritize first, second, and third. So GTS was a product that they've had for a while now. It's continuing to mature. That Versa was a very good segregation of duties, you know, starting point. So I think we're on the right track, but, you know, there's a long way to go.
How, in terms of the, I know SAP emphasized the GRC framework. Josh, do you know anything about this, the GRC framework, and, you know, do most companies already have this type of framework in place?
My understanding is primarily no, and that's really because for the most part, and Abby, chime in if I'm painting your company with the wrong brush. For the most part, compliance, risk, and governance has not been a centralized function. It's not one in which there has been sort of an enterprise-wide view. It's been more done as an ad hoc basis and a departmental, subsidiary, business unit kind of level. We know from past experience, painful experience, that every time you have that kind of ad hoc set of solution making going on, there's a lot of waste, there's a lot of redundancy, there are things left undone that should be done. So I think the first order of business for a lot of companies would be to really take a step back and have a, you know, take this enterprise-wide view and make sure that there is consistency in business practices and in compliance and other issues across the board, and then really try to drive that the processes from a centralized standpoint. This is obviously a requirement in a lot of the regulatory issues. It's also a requirement for good business practice. And like I said, I think a lot of companies just have to sort of initially start with that, you know, let's do this as an enterprise-wide function. At which point, again, SAP strategy is, well, here's this first platform. We'll provide this for you as the, you know, as the infrastructure for doing this. But I think Abby's right. We need a lot of best practices too. We need a lot more than just saying here's some technology. Here's a blueprint. Go figure out what would work for your company. I think there needs to be a lot of industry direction. The nice thing about the partnership model that SAP is going to bring forth is that they are rightly counting on a lot of smaller companies, ISVs who are really deep domain experts in particular industries and in particular issues within industries to come up and create software that addresses a particular functional problem and throw it into the platform and turn it into a compliance, risk, and governance product. And that I think is going to help a lot with getting companies moving towards these solutions.
Now, Rod, Josh mentioned best practices, and immediately I think of the benchmarking campaign that ASUG and SAP is doing. Is there any connection there with compliance?
You know, we have done benchmark initiatives around financial controls and those types of topics, but certainly this would be a good area for us to do a deeper examination for benchmarking activities as well as best practices.
And it's got to be quite a difficult area to even develop best practices around, right? I mean, it's such a company-specific area.
Absolutely. It's company-specific because managing your compliance is different in a public company, a public sector business, as well as a privately held company, although a lot of the notions of what are best practices apply across the board. There are just some areas where there's additional legal requirements that in a public company that aren't necessarily faced in some other enterprises.
Although there's a lot of private companies today that are really following suit with, I think, starting with the Sarbanes legislation and really now starting to just follow the same suit as all of the public companies, maybe not to the nth degree required, but definitely from managing risk and the appropriate governance bodies in place to ensure that, you know, you've got the right control mechanisms and you're watching your landscape.
Abby, this is Rod. I would agree with that. I think part of what's driving private held companies to hold themselves up to similar standards as they face audits as well, government audits, they're also seeing some of the same processes and procedures that are being used with publicly held companies, at least from an IT perspective,
right,
as well as a financial controls perspective. So I agree with you.
Abby, in terms of a mid-market CIO versus a large company CIO, is there really a major difference between how they address compliance?
I think the processes are the same. I think generally you do the same sets of activities in the company. It's just the reach and the span that gets broader and broader, the more employees that you have and the massiveness of your enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
But I think today, you know, the law and the regulations are dictating that the same sets of practices be employed throughout all companies, you know, large and small.
And where do the consultants fit in here? I mean, are companies hiring employees specifically to deal with compliance, or are they hiring, for the most part, consultants right now?
I think you have a mix happening. There is some level of consultancy that's happening to help you get your processes put in place and, you know, figure out what do you have to do, what do you have to implement as far as, you know, controls. And then there's some sets of companies that are actually outsourcing some of the auditing activities as well. So, you know, you can really kind of see the gamut happening in the market today.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're just about out of time. Abby Molders, Joshua Greenbaum, and Rod Masney, thank you very much for joining Matt Danielson and I. Check out our previous podcasts at searchsap.com/audio. For now, that's it for Compliance. I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.